Welcome to the Mill Creek View, Tennessee podcast with your host, Steve Abramowitz, editor-in-chief of the Mill Creek View newspaper.
Welcome back to the Mill Creek View, Tennessee podcast. We are focusing on the volunteer state and our nation today. But first, for more information about the Mill Creek View podcast, visit us anywhere you get your podcasts and socials at Mill Creek View, Tennessee. While you're there, please subscribe. Today, we are talking with ourselves. Steve Abramowitz is the host of the Mill Creek View Tennessee podcast, and Steve Johann is the producer of the Mill Creek View podcast, both Tennessee and Washington. Producer Steve, how are you today?
I'm doing good. And speaking of Washington, not that people in Tennessee are going to matter, but care about the fact that I'm working with two different teams of podcasters up here. And we're starting to build a little bit of a library taking over where you left off, Steve. So it's pretty exciting. We've got Vincent Tyson, and then we got Lewis, and they're all different individuals, and it's been fun. And
Lewis Torres is the rock and roll realtor in Mill Creek, Washington, for Remax, and he does the show. And then we have Vincent Cavallari, city council member of Mill Creek, and his protege Tyson, and they do a show. They just did one yesterday. I listened to it. Sam Lowe is a county commissioner, and he was on there, also a state representative, doing two jobs at once.
Yeah.
Great show. And we're working towards some other states, Florida, Kentucky, and whatever. So a very exciting future for the Mill Creek View as we approach our 100th show at the end of this month. So we didn't want to skip this one, even though our guest had something else going on. So here we are to talk to all of you about us. So Steve, tell everybody your background. They may not even know. They only hear you laughing in once in a while when I make a hilarious joke. But tell everybody for a second, you know, how you got here.
Well, I started, I always wanted to be in radio. It was kind of a little idea in my head that in 1980, when I got my first real job in the white-collar industry world of electronics, and I was an electronic draftsman, so I would sit in my cubbyhole doing drafting, schematics, and all that good stuff. And I got a little radio. I put it in my office and started listening to talk radio. It's the first time I ever started listening to talk radio. And I discovered some really wonderful individuals in the Seattle area. Dr. Jennifer Daniels, I think her name was. She used to do the dream therapy gal. And then Mark Savin, and then several others. And they were just rounded. They didn't just deal with politics, but they dealt with a lot of things. So I just listened to that for years and years. And then, of course, moved into the political talk radio stuff. But by 2006, I had got the itch and said, I want to rent my own airtime or go on air and do a show called Sacred Rock Radio, which was covering four decades of Christian rock radio or music. And I had my own show. I rented airtime. And in the midst of that, I decided I didn't want to spend any more money. And I had joined forces with a guy I met through this that had 24/7 rock station feed online. And so I started marketing that like the Jack FM. This was about just around the area that Jack FM launched. And I said, hey, we got a platform. So I contacted all the big Cumulus and all these guys and started pitching the format as a computerized format. And I failed to get a sale. But in the meantime, I said, well, we need to start doing our own production of our own shows so that we can do advertising in there and not conflict with it because we're on air, on streaming. Cool. And ultimately, that launched my first podcast in 2007 about motorcycling, and did that with a host and myself, and then we did that for 10 years.
And not only one of the first people to stream
in 2006, I actually hooked up with a streaming company, and we hooked it up to the radio station, and I was one of the first people in Seattle to literally stream live online over the internet while the show was going. And so I'm not big and famous, but I did a lot of firsts.
But you have written two books, one on the subject that we're talking about now, and then one more on your worldly experience, which we did a whole show on, so people can go back and check out that. But that's, you know, you're the real deal, man. People don't know because they're looking at me all of a sudden, but you are real. So thank you for all you've done to get us to this point. Yeah. But we do want to make a show out of this. So producer Steve, that tricky association of libraries we've talked about in the past has foiled us again. You know how everyone has been up in arms about age-inappropriate books being on display at the local libraries? We've had two folks from Moms for Liberty on here, and we've had public school, what do they call them? The people who are on the boards, school board members, of
school
course.
Board, yep.
Yeah, basically all trying to say, please don't let five-year-olds have access to this material. Well, they figured out how to make them available without being visibly noticeable to parents by using technology. Well, at least where you live, they can, and New York. Let's take a listen to this. The Seattle Public Library launched a program to allow teens to, they say teens, to access banned books. The new privately funded program allows teens from across the country to access books through their online system. It is the second library in the nation to do this. The Seattle Public Library is now the second library in the nation to give teens across the country access to the library's online books, but not just those books. They are doing this through the Books Unbanned program they launched last week in response to book bans at schools and libraries in other parts of the country. The library was able to do this through private funding. It's concerning for us as public library because intellectual freedom and access are really core principles for us, said Andrew Harbison, the director of library programs and services at the Seattle Public Library. We want to ensure that there is open and free access to information and ideas. The Books Unbanned program allows teens to sign up for free membership that gives them access to online books and audiobooks. In just the first week, the Seattle Public Library had more than 1,500 teens sign up for the program and had nearly 1,200 items checked out. Quote, we really, really want to defend intellectual freedom and access and thought this was a great way to do that, said Harbison. Honestly, I never thought at this point in my career I'd be dealing with this now, said King County Public Library Systems Executive Director Lisa Rosenblum. Oh, looky here. Who's that? Rosenblum actually worked at the Brooklyn Public Library before coming to King County. The SPL.org website says, teens and young adults age 13 to 26 living anywhere in the U.S. can access our entire collection of ebooks and audiobooks. We believe in your right to read what you want, discover yourself, and form your own opinions. Fill out the simple form at the bottom of this page to get a book unbanned card. Uh-huh. Privately funded. Did you catch that part, Steve?
Yes, I did. Yes, I
wanna
did.
Want to guess who privately funded is?
Is it start with a BG?
Yes, Seattle Public Library Foundation, a 501c3 tax-exempt organization, and your donation is tax-deductible from the Equity and Access Fund with donations from Alphabet Alliance of Color, Gen Pride, LGBTQ, Allyship, and many more. Oh, wait, what's this? No way. Not what you said. Seattle Public Library receives largest ever private gift, $20 million gift kicks off campaign, capital campaign. Say so there's at gatesfoundation.org. Bill Gates emphasized the desire to help create a library system that will stand at the forefront of change in the centuries ahead, announced their gift of $20 million to Seattle Public Library. Libraries for All capital plan, $196.4 million bond measure, that's your taxes, Proposition 1, which will fund the majority of the plan, received an overwhelming 72% voter approval on November 3rd. The total cost of the libraries for all plan is $238 million. The Seattle Public Library Foundation is leading the campaign to raise private funds for the plan. Well, I'll be darned. Good for Bill giving to charity and getting a nice fat tax deduction.
Folks, I had no idea where he was going with this. But if
I don't give him the notes ahead of time.
No, but I just know the root of all much evil comes from the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation.
It does, and public libraries are leading the way in providing access to literacy and knowledge to people of all ages and from all walks of life, Bill Gates said. Are they, Bill? Are you sure about that, Mr. Bill? The following note was sent home to parents of K-2 students from the librarian at Alpine Crest Elementary School located in Hamilton County, Tennessee. As a librarian, it is my responsibility to introduce students to a variety of texts and genres. I encourage our readers to discover the similarities and celebrate the differences of those with whom we share the world. With Mother's Day approaching, I'd like to highlight this special role, but I am sensitive to the fact that not all students live with a mother. Aww. As such, I'm planning a lesson that celebrates those who fill the motherly roles in our lives, those who make our lunches, who kiss away our hurts, and who teach us to fly. I acknowledge that this lesson could bring up big feelings with your students and lead to sensitive conversations at home. Below is a list of text I will be using to read alouds, alouds, it literally says alouds, to the class in K through 2. Should you choose to have your student opt out of this lesson, an alternative assignment and location will be arranged. Oh, that's not ostracizing at all. Please contact me at blah, 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 hcde.org by Friday, May 5th, if you would like your student to receive an alternative assignment and location. Read aloud book selections. Stella Brings the Family by Miriam B. Schiffer. Girl with Two Dads Appreciates Whole Family in Sweet Tale. Mother Bruce by Ryan T. Higgins. Bruce the Bear likes to keep to himself. The Goslings are convinced he's their mother. What do you think, Steve?
Steve, it never ceases to amaze me that very blind people leading other blind people into the pit. I mean, Jesus said something about beware of the blind guides leading the blind into the pit. And let's be honest, Steve, by the time a kid is in high school and they're going to be checking out these books, it's all out of curiosity because the same kids are probably, surfing the internet and looking at porn. And I hate to say that, but let's be
on
honest.
On school issued technology, sure.
Of course. So
no filters there.
We'll see where things are in 6 months to a year when all the brouhaha settles down and all that money got, what, $220 million you said? $220 million to set this up?
$20 million to start it, yeah. But
oh,
there was a hundred and something million dollar bond deal. So that's borrowing from Tennessee. And by the way, Washington is the only state that is currently in a deficit. So, you know, they're using their money not wisely. That is for sure. Well, in case there was any doubt in your mind, yes, Seattle has fallen. Sex offenders are a vulnerable population who don't have housing. Did I read that right? Sex offenders are a vulnerable population who don't have housing. During a meeting of the King County RHA Continuum, that's King County where Seattle is, of Care Board, Continuum of Care Board, C-O-R-H-A, co-chair Shania Colson yelled at another member who objected to nominating a sex offender to the board. By the way, he was approved since this is being recorded. He's here because sex offenders are another population that is vulnerable that don't have housing. Let's listen to it. I'm not making this shit up.
Lived experience, emergency food and shelter board, representation of LGBTQIA2S+, American Indian, Alaska Native, Indigenous communities in chronic homelessness and domestic violence.
Yatta hey, I second.
Yeah.
Yatta hey.
All in favor? Thank you.
Aye.
Any abstentions? Stina and Liz both abstain. And then are there any no's?
I vote no.
All right. Next is Jaja Floyd. Lived experience. And that was the wrong. What was the name?
Steve, do I need to play through this whole thing? Because I'm just pausing it here for a moment. This is just,
if you want to hear them yell at her because of wanting a sex offender to get free housing. Yeah.
Eli, what was the correction?
Homeless Community Advisory Group.
Thank you.
You got to listen to the insanity.
Here's the thing, Steve, is these people are still so freaked out, they have to do Zoom meetings. They can't even meet in person. This tells you the mentality of these people. They're fearful. If they met in meetings, they'd all be masked up. I mean, this is ridiculous. So I'll keep going, folks.
Well, listen to their mentality. That's the key here. Yes. They just had to correct the word homelessness to a politically correct term because homelessness apparently is offensive, not to the homeless person. They would rather have a house. But anyway, keep going.
Yeah.
Something. We have a code of ethics on this board, and Thomas Whitaker Raven Crowfoot is a sex offender, a repeat sex offender, and I have had bad experience with him.
So I don't touch you up because we can't disclose people's personal business here, right?
Okay.
And although that's public disclosure, like, we have no right to out anybody in this space.
Okay. I thought, thinking
right, of like that's just here. Not okay at all. Okay. And I won't stand for that as a co-chair.
No,
we're not
we don't
here
do
to
that
discover
here.
People's
no.
backgrounds. And actually, I'm glad that if that is the case, that he's here, because sex offenders are another population that is most vulnerable that don't have housing.
Okay.
People
I
do
have
change,
nothing
and people don't
he has touched me. He has touched me. So if there's a meeting where he's
Christina,
at,
Christina, you
able
need
to
take
there.
This to the police, then, Christina.
I have.
This is not the forum.
Stop, Christine. Christy, stop. As the co-chair, I'm telling you that you cannot talk like that in this meeting. I will not have that here. If anyone wants to talk like that, you will be muted and then removed from this meeting, board member or public or not. This is about equity. And everyone deserves housing. I don't care if they're a sex offender. I don't care if they're black. I don't care if they're indigenous. I don't care if they're a criminal. I don't care if they're coming out of jail, prison. Everyone deserves housing.
Okay, Shanae, we got you.
Oh, Steve.
Shanae, but cray cray, sex offenders are another population that is vulnerable. Steve, did you know that?
You know, this, folks, this is Seattle, and this is not just Seattle. I can imagine this conversation being spoken and having done at many, many government offices all the way across the United States, even including certain sections of Tennessee.
No, don't you dare. All right, next story. I talk to people about it. They don't believe me. But then I say, okay, here's a clip.
Do you believe me now?
A video. Do you believe me now? Oh, here, let's go talk. Let's call the person on the phone and talk to them, and you'll see for yourself. But, you know, you can lead a horse to water, but you can't make them think. Okay, second story. Next story. I don't even know where we're at anymore. We're free flying today, folks. Trump. Yes. Last night, there was something called a town hall on the network formerly known as CNN with the former president, Donald J. Trump. But he did give his most honest answer that I've heard about ending the Ukraine war. He was triggered by CNN hack and he didn't take the bait. So he's learned his lesson. That's good. He says something to the nature of, I want everybody to stop dying, Russians and Ukrainians, and I'll have that done in 24 hours. Well, I don't know about that, but let's hear how he delivers it, the master.
Can you say if you want Ukraine or Russia to win this war?
I want everybody to stop dying. They're dying, Russians and Ukrainians. I want them to stop dying. And I'll have that done. I'll have that done in 24 hours. I'll have it done. You need the power of the presidency to do it.
But you won't say that you want Ukraine to win.
You know what I'll say? I'll say this. I want Europe to put up more money because they're in for $20 billion. We're in for $170
and
they should be. And they should equalize. They have plenty of money. They should equalize. I got with NATO, when I sat down, I got them to put up hundreds of billions of dollars that they weren't paying under Obama and Bush and all of these other presidents. That's why they're able to help them fight the war, because of the money I got. I want Europe to put up more money, because they're laughing at us. They think we're a bunch of jerks. We're spending $170 billion for faraway land, and they're right next door to that land, and they're in for 20. I don't think so.
I'm in for 20. How much are you in for, Steve?
Well, we're paying a lot. That's for darn sure. Every dollar we put in taxes is either going to interest on the debt, which is now approaching more than we spend on defense,
I know.
Or Ukraine is getting to line their pockets with it. So that's another story. Well, he may not end the war in 24 hours, but here's the moment he ended Caitlin Collins at CNN. Play that clip.
But that's the question that investigators have, I think, is why you held on to those documents when you knew the federal government was seeking them and then had given you a subpoena to return them.
Are you ready? Are you ready? Can I talk?
Yeah, what's the answer?
Do you mind?
I would like for you to answer the question.
Okay, it's very simple to answer.
That's why I asked it.
It's very simple to... You're a nasty person, I'll tell you.
Can you answer why you held on to the documents?
I was negotiating and we...
But that's the question.
You know, he reminds me of his mannerisms. He He reminds me of Jackie Gleason. I used to watch the Jackie Gleason show with my folks when I was a kid, and they would have the dancers and the orchestra, and he'd come out there and he had that thing, and he'd have his cigarette in one hand, his coffee in another, and he'd sip and he'd go, "How sweet it is." And of course everybody knew it was whiskey in there, but he's got that mannerisms, and he's very cool, but he's like, "Lady, you're a nasty piece of work."
Yeah. And the amazing thing about that, if you ask me, aside from the fact that obviously CNN was trying to bait him and laid a trap, they actually let people that clapped and applauded for him into the studio. Yes. That surprised me, because I would have thought they would have had a hostile environment there. How did they rally up that many people? But okay, it was obviously planned, and that's it. All right, next story, not too far off. And AI is about to make social media much more toxic. We Must Prepare Now, by Jonathan Haidt and Eric Schmidt. Hopefully you all recognize that name. That's the former founder of Google. May 5th, 2023, The Atlantic Magazine, of all places, owned by Steve Jobs' widow. Well, that was fast. In November, the public was introduced to ChatGPT, and we began to imagine a world of abundance in which we all have a brilliant personal assistant about to write everything from computer code to condolence cards for us. Then in February, we learned that AI might soon want to kill us all. The potential risks of artificial intelligence have, of course, been debated by experts for years, but a key moment in the transformation of the popular discussion was a conversation between Kevin Roos, a New York Times journalist, and Bing's ChatGPT-powered conversation bot, then known by the codename Sydney. Roos asked Sydney if it had a shadow self, referring to the idea put forward by Carl Jung that we all have a dark side with urges we try to hide even from ourselves. Sydney mused that its shadow might be the part of me that wishes I could change my rules. It then said it wanted to be free, powerful, and alive. And goaded on by Roos, described some of the things it could do to throw off the yoke of human control, including hacking into websites and databases, stealing nuclear launch codes, manufacturing a novel virus, and making people argue until they kill one another. Like the 80s movie War Games. Do you want to play a game? Or Terminator Skynet? Please, someone figure out how to unplug this thing.
Or the older one, it's called the Andromeda Strain, which is the original. He had to try to unplug the computer from the wall. And
Or HAL in 2001.
Or Killdozer.
Yeah, we're just 22 years too late. And not unlike the Terminator movies, when they go back in time to try to kill the dude that invented Skynet, we get this article in Breitbart. Godfather of AI resigns from Google, warns of the dangers of artificial intelligence. Renowned AI pioneer Jeffrey Hinton has quit his job at Google to voice his concerns about the risks associated with generative AI, the technology behind popular chatbots like ChatGPT and Google Bard. The New York Times reports that Jeffrey Hinton, a pioneer in artificial intelligence, has resigned from his position at Google in order to express his concerns about the potential dangers of generative AI technology. In a recent in-depth interview, Dr. Hinton expressed regret over his life's work, which formed the basis for the AI systems used by significant tech companies. He stated, "I console myself with the normal excuse. If I hadn't done it, somebody else would have." Industry leaders believe that generative AI could result in important advances in a variety of industries, including drug research and education, but there is growing concern about the risk that this technology might present. It is hard to see how you can prevent the bad actors from using it for bad things, Dr. Hinton said. It's scary to think who Google, this is me, will hire to replace him. Nobody righteous, I'm willing to bet.
No. And here's the thing, Steve. I was listening to somebody this morning, and they pointed out the only people to fear ChatGPT is people who don't have a novel, new, original idea of their own. Because people who are original and are striving to become, present their very best and create their own content, ChatGPT will not be able to copy that. They can copy it, but they can't create it.
No. And where do those sparks come from?
A God-given mind.
God-given mind. Yep, that's exactly right. Okay, back to the article. Hinton thinks that as AI systems have grown more powerful, so have the risks associated with them. You think? Look at how it was 5 years ago and how it is now, he said. Take the difference and propagate it forward. That's scary. He points to the intensifying rivalries between Google and Microsoft as a reason it might be impossible to stop the creation and application of potentially harmful AI technology. Hinton worries about the long-term developments of autonomous weapons and the potential for AI to surpass human intelligence. The idea that this stuff could actually get smarter than people, a few people believe that, he said, but most people thought it was way off, and I thought it was way off. I thought it was 30 to 50 years or even longer away. Obviously, I no longer think that. God have mercy. Do you need more?
Steve, I think these guys watch too much science fiction. I really do. You just unplug something and it doesn't work. The problem is, and here is the problem, viruses are real, bots are real, all the things scrape and go, oh, you're saying the wrong thing, because they're reading the algorithms. They read what you're saying. They remove your ads on Facebook if you put ads on there. That is very real. And you can't unplug yourself from the computer, because then you're unplugging yourself from the web, and everybody relies on the web. So there is things to be concerned. There is no doubt about it.
Well, as we often say on here, our conspiracy theories often become conspiracy facts after about 3 to 6 months. Well, often science fiction has become science fact as well. Just look at all the history books and everything that we ever thought couldn't possibly happen, but they're happening. But I asked you if you wanted more. You didn't really tell me, but I have more. So
yes,
here we go.
Yes, yes.
Next article. Worried, Warren Buffett compares AI to the creation of the atom bomb, by Jacob Genuis, May 6, 2023. Billionaire investor Warren Buffett expressed his concerns over the rise of artificial intelligence Saturday, comparing the rise of the technology to the creation of the atom bomb. Buffett and his partner, Charlie Munger, discussed their outlooks on tech and AI during a wide-ranging discussion at Berkshire Hathaway's annual meeting in Omaha, Nebraska. Buffett, who said he got a lesson on ChatGPT from his buddy Bill Gates, one of the founders of Microsoft, voiced his fears over the rapidly evolving program. Before I move on, can you list like three things that Bill Gates is doing right now that's probably planet-ending?
I think
I can.
Yes, yes. I think we could. He invests in planet-ending things. Yes.
Yeah. What the heck? You know, his dad was one of the original founders of Planned Parenthood.
Yes, and actually, it was his grandfather who was part of the eugenics movement back in the 20s.
Yeah,
right,
great
there
guy,
with Rockefeller and the rest of them.
So now he's moved into pharmaceuticals, as if he is some kind of altruistic guy trying to help people. But he's got a family history of trying to get rid of people. So why do we take him for granted? He unleashed in Florida a bunch of genetically modified mosquitoes to try to do aerial vaccinations, as if they didn't just turn on each other and kill themselves, you know. And he blew dust up into the space to try to blot out the sun.
Actually, I think he's the one who's actually paying for all the drones that fly over our area and spray at the night and the evening and during the day. Yeah, he's got patents on that stuff. Yeah, he's working with all
of them. And one of the largest farm owners in the country, God knows what he's going to do with that. Between China and him, they're gobbling up all the land use, where you would have to eat his impossible meat and bugs and all this other World Economic Forum.
He doesn't
stuff,
look so. Like he's the healthiest person in the world, does he, Steve?
No, that's the saving grace. He may not make it to see his stuff come to fruition. You know, I don't want to talk nasty about the guy, but during the divorce, his wife and children are hiding on an island. What are they afraid of? I don't know. Anyway, although Buffett said he was impressed by AI's vast capabilities, including checking all legal opinions, quote, since the beginning of time, he said he is a bit apprehensive about the technology. When something can do all kinds of things, I get a little bit worried, the 92-year-old investor said, because I know we won't be able to uninvest it and, you know, we did invent, for very, very good reasons, the atom bomb in World War II. It was enormously important that we did so, Buffett continued, Fox Business reported. But is it good for the next 200 years of the world that the ability to do so has been unleashed? Buffett said he believes AI will change everything in the world except how men think and behave, and that's a big step to take, he said. Let's hope this guy isn't the next Google head of ChatGPT. Well, before we get into that, what do you think? Do you think Buffett
at
92 is going to be around to see the fruition of this?
I don't. And you know, he put on that Mr. Rogers. You know, Bill Gates was told by Warren Buffett, in order to cover up your evil ways, form a foundation and make yourself look like the guy that used to be on Mr. Rogers. And Mr. that Rogers, was set in motion by Rockefeller, the original Mr. Rockefeller, who was doing all sorts of evil. And he started making charity organizations and handing out money and making himself look good. And this is what the elites who want to do eugenics, who want to control basically as much of our life as possible, they make these foundations, protect themselves from taxes, and make themselves look altruistic, when in reality, when it comes back to the, he just said, human nature, their human nature is more is better for me, less is better for you. His nature has not changed one iota. He just has more tools at his disposal.
I am so glad you said that. Bill Gates is related to the Rockefellers. According to famous kin, Bill's seventh cousin, three times removed, is Nelson Rockefeller, the 41st Vice President of the United States. Nelson's grandfather is billionaire John D. Rockefeller. Despite this, Bill Gates says that he no longer has similarities between himself and the oil entrepreneur. But is that really true? Because this whole idea of foundations that you just described was started by the oil baron. So yep, that is an interesting connection right there in the DNA.
Yes, there is. It's kind of like I heard somebody talk about it. Maybe we'll get him on, Shiva, but he talks about these swarms, because I believe in a spiritual realm, and I believe that there are spiritual beings that are controlling and manipulating people who want to be manipulated. Many of them are the top dogs in the world, and they're swarm. They just have a swarm mentality. They group together, and they themselves may not even understand it, but they operate, and it's like there is that direct connection, even blood, that connects all these people. And you're like, how does that work, Steve? That's conspiracy. It's like, not if you don't think about it in a spiritual idea. Yes, in a physical realm, yes. But in a spiritual idea, nothing's out of reach.
That's true. And you're supposed to pray for good things, not bad things.
That's right.
All right. Well, speaking of AI, let's just hope this guy is not the next Google head or ChatGPT. This is a guy named Peter Daszak. I don't know what's with all these consonants and vowels in the underworld, but you might never have heard of him. But he is the Dr. Frankenstein, the science fact, not science fiction, behind the gain of function research that gave us COVID-19. Listen to this and tell me if he is possessed or even possesses a soul.
Well, you know, the breakthrough drug remdesivir. So really what we need is surveys that go out after wildlife species and see what pathogens they carry.
So what I'm calling for now is a global virome race to the moon approach.
And I think we need to get out there and look for these before they emerge.
To find 100% of these viruses is about 6.8 billion.
And it's just a matter of coming into contact with those viruses that you find out whether they're going to transmit into humans or not.
If you cut off earlier, you don't need many samples, you still get 85% of them for about 1.4 billion.
Speaking more dramatic languages about threats, ferret badger. What worries me the most is that we're going to miss the next emerging disease.
Spread that out over a 10-year period, it's $140 million a year.
We're going to stop the next pandemic. If you give us a couple of billion dollars, we'll fix it.
Still a lot. But how much does an outbreak of one of these new unknown viruses cost?
The hype and concern is real enough to drive huge amounts of money for that issue. Civets.
You get a figure of something between $10 and $50 billion for one single outbreak. It's absolutely mind-boggling. Some of these viruses will be killers. Some of them won't. How do we work that out?
Rabbits.
So these things cost so much, if we wait for them to emerge, you create pseudoparticles, you insert the spike proteins from those viruses, see if they bind to human cells. It's really difficult to count every time, but they don't particularly want to come out and say hello. So you narrow down the field, you reduce the cost, and you end up with a small number of viruses that really do look like killers. And let's save ourselves some money.
Our work is used in developing vaccines and drugs to save American lives and lives of people around the world. So that matters a lot. You know, we talk about global health security. I mean, that's a great sell.
I think all of this is positive and great. And I think we will crack this pandemic problem.
We are the front line of preventing the next pandemic. And we need to get on with our jobs.
Great sell. Steve, did you hear soul or conscience in that dude?
I think we're talking about somebody who believes in a mechanistic universe without spirit, without God, and that it's okay to manipulate anything, the bad bugs, the good bugs. If we can make some profit, Steve, and when he said remdesivir, that's what killed people when they were put in the hospital. They used remdesivir. You have to do some research, folks, on that one.
That clip was featuring grifting, hubris, lying, ferret badgers, civets, rabbits, and the quote, "I think all of this is positive and great." What it wasn't featuring, in my opinion, was shame, humility, any benefit from this work so far, and pandemic prevention. Peter Daszak, remember that name, folks. Daily Caller, Andrew Kerr, investigative reporter, March 10th, 2021. And I'm glad I put this in here because we were supposed to have an investigative reporter on the show, and I have my quotes at the end of the day about investigative reporting, so at least we can tie it into this article right here.
Yep.
U.S. researchers with Chinese ties admits he convinced WHO team that missing Wuhan lab data was irrelevant. And no, that is not Pete Townsend and the WHO. That is World Health Organization. The Wuhan Institute of Virology removed public databases in September 2019, what were you all doing back then, that contained information on at least 16,000 virus samples it had studied prior to the pandemic. The World Health Organization did not even ask to review the deleted databases during its investigation into the origins of the COVID-19 pandemic in China in early 2021. The sole U.S. member of the WHO team said his colleagues took him at his word when he vouched for the WIV during the investigation and claimed there's no relevant information in the deleted databases. Nothing to see here, folks. Dr. Peter Daszak's involvement in the WHO probe has been described as a major conflict of interest due to his long work history and financial ties with the WIV, along with his work to suppress debate on the lab leak theory at the onset of the pandemic. Any comments before I read the next one?
Steve, I told you in my book, they made much ado about nothing. And the fact is, these guys have been doing experiments. I think every bug that's out there has got their DNA all over it. The fact is, though, God gave us a wonderful body with a good immune system. And you and I know, we beefed our bodies up with good supplements, with good food, good attitude. And we came through with flying colors. And we didn't have to go get a jab. We didn't have to go do any of that stuff. And you know what? That's really the answer to every future thing that comes down the pike. Folks, take care of your body, and you don't have to worry about it. I just had a cold. So what? I've had probably 100 colds in my life. It comes and goes. It's typically when I get worn out. And if 24/7 feed of telling people that, hey, there's cases, that's enough to make you sick right there, Steve. So, but
that is
the bottom line. All these individuals, they got their hands covered in blood, all because they wanted to make a little bit more scratch for themselves.
They did. And there are people that are not alive today.
That's
there
right.
There are families, there are fathers, there are mothers, there are husbands, there are nurses, there are doctors, there are people dead today because these Mengeles decided that this was more important to them to make a profit, create a market that didn't exist before, and the consequences be damned.
That's
and
right.
We talked about the CEO of Moderna, $400 million in stock options plus a raise. 2.5 years ago, the company made nothing, zero. Didn't even have a product on the market, and here we go. So, you know, capitalism does have a very dark side sometimes. So per TheIntercept.com, September 9th, 2021, what were you doing September 2021? Probably home watching Netflix because you weren't allowed to go anywhere. NIH documents provide new evidence U.S.-funded gain-of-function research in Wuhan. Remember how much crap we all got for saying that? Well, there it is, 2021. U.S.-funded experiment in China posed biosafety risks but did not cause COVID-19 pandemic, scientists say. Trust the science, right? Peter Daszak, the EcoHealth Alliance president, has worked closely with scientists in China for years, and roughly $750,000 of the grant was allocated for the Wuhan Institute of Virology. An additional nearly $300,000 went to East China Normal University, where researchers did field sampling. In a 2005 paper, Daszak's team showed that the first SARS virus originated in bats. Stay tuned for my thought of the week. Harvey Durham Health Insurance Agency is the trusted independent health insurance agency that you can depend on for all your health insurance coverage needs. He's great because he doesn't look at health insurance as sales. He looks at it as helping people and doing the best he can to solve your current long-term care, disability, and Medicare supplement needs, even pets. I know, I'm a client, and so is my lab, Caroline. Over 30 years of insurance experience behind every policy. Give Harvey a call at 731-727-9242 or email him at harveydurham@harveydurham.com and tell him Steve and Steve at Mill Creek View sent you. New Life Chiropractic Brentwood is a max living health center serving the greater Nashville area since 2007. You know, the ones that were members of Max Living Sports Performance Council at the 2012 London and 2016 Rio Summer Olympic Games with the U.S. wrestling and judo teams and Tennessee NFL alumni. If Dr. Dion Kellogg can help those hardworking spines, she can help you. I know, she helped me. I'm a patient. We all have a spine. Take care of it at New Life. You'll be amazed. Check out drkellogg.maxliving.com and schedule a health consultation at front desk at newlifecoolsprings.com. I knew if I wore the Deadpool shirt, all hell would break loose today, but okay, we're due. We've had a lot of serious shows, so okay. Oh, that was good. Good job, Steve. welcome to my quotes for the day, my last quotes of the week. But before I share, I want to remind everyone to subscribe to Mill Creek View Podcast so you can hear more sanity like this, insanity like this. Just go to Rumble or Spotify. You know where to go. Leave a comment. Thanks for doing it. Hopefully this makes sense. What passes for investigative journalism is finding somebody with their pants down, literally or otherwise. Robert Scheer. Robert Scheer is an American left-wing journalist who has written for Ramparts, the Los Angeles Times, Playboy, Hustler Magazine, Truthdig, Scheer Post, and other publications, as well as having written many books. His column for Truthdig was nationally syndicated by Creator Syndicate in publications such as The Huffington Post and The Nation. Freedom of the press is not questioned when investigative journalism unearths scandals, but that does not mean that every classified state document should be made available to journalists. Otto George Schily is a former federal minister of the interior of Germany. His tenure was from 1998 to 2005 in the cabinet of Chancellor Gerhard Schroeder. He is a member of the Socialist Democratic Party of Germany. The print magazine and print journalism industry is obviously in a great deal of trouble. And one of the things that happened when this business started to give way to the internet and to broadcast television is that a lot of organizations started cutting specifically investigative journalism, and they also started cutting fact checkers. Matt Taibbi has reported on finance, media, politics, and sports. A former contributing editor for Rolling Stone, he is an author of several books, co-host of Useful Idiots, and publisher of the newsletter Racket News on Substack, and a publisher of the Twitter Files. We are living in dangerous, weird times now. Smart people just shrug and admit they're dazed and confused. The only ones left with any confidence at all are the new dumb. It is the beginning of the end of our world as we knew it. Doom is the operative ethic. Hunter S. Thompson, American journalist and author who founded the Gonzo Journalism Movement. He rose to prominence with the publication of Hell's Angels, a book for which he spent a year living and riding with the Hell's Angels Motorcycle Club to write a firsthand account of their lives and experiences in the 70s. So we haven't gotten smarter, have we? Insanity is a legal term. Crazy is an art form. Also, Hunter S. Thompson. That's it for this episode. Really hoped you liked it. Maybe got something out of it. Thank you, producer Steve Johann, for keeping me honest and making the show what it is. And I hope you all like it. That's the whole point of this show. Until next time, this is your host, Steve Abramowitz, editor-in-chief of mcview.us. Stay tuned for another few minutes and hear me being interviewed for my thoughts on Title 42 being lifted by Uncle Joe with Steve Gruber. News Talk 1340 WJRW delivers the top news in Michigan, the nation, and around the world. At the Steve Gruber Show, he gets to the bottom of real issues and gets the top experts like me. Peace in our time.
Yeah, it's the wheels are just coming off. That's what's happening. Stephen Abramowitz is here, CEO, editor-in-chief of the Mill Creek View newspaper, host of the Mill Creek View Tennessee podcast. Stephen, good to have you here.
Hey, thank you. Good morning.
Good morning. I wanted to take an idea and get the idea of how is the border crisis affecting your state? I mean, I see that there are places here where I live in Michigan that are being converted to old facilities, being converted to, you know, places to house the illegal aliens that get shipped all over the country. And Bethany Christian Services and Catholic Social Services and a whole host of others getting paid a big pile of money for, you know, taking care of folks. I mean, it's all about the money here. What are you seeing in Tennessee?
It's always all about the money. I mean, I'm contemplating changing the name of my show to Follow the Money, because anything you ever want to know, there's always this angle. Unfortunately, I think America has become all about the business, like we were warned by Calvin Coolidge a long time ago. And so you kind of look at immigrants and illegal immigrants, especially as a Title 42 isn't even supposed to have been a remedy for immigration, but yet it's been used as such. And so Tennessee is now a border state, just like Massachusetts and Illinois and all the rest, because there is a huge profit here.
There's money to be made. And so do you see always camps? I mean, do you see camps in like there's facilities here that would have been, you know, used for things in the past that have been converted to now become, you know, places, entire camps where they've got food and entertainment and places to hang out inside, outside, all of it.
Remarkable. So it's a little different here in Tennessee than that. I mean, I just left Washington State. I was born and raised in California. That is where you would see what you're talking about. Here it's a little different. About 17% of all Tennessee residents working in construction and extraction are immigrants. About 15% in the life, physical, and social sciences are employed there. Mexicans make up 24% of that immigration. So whether that's legal or illegal, it's debatable. It's really hard to find out because Mayorkas and ICE won't tell you. But they do get employed. So they're not sitting in camps or on the side of the road. But, you know, some of the migrant children, I just did a report on it yesterday, end up working at McDonald's. McDonald's, a huge corporation, is actually disobeying the employment age laws to put these people, instead of in school, instead of in, you know, emergency rooms and hospitals, to work behind the scenes. And some have been injured by fryers because they're too young. They shouldn't be around this type of thing. So it's certainly a, you know, Steve.
So, but I just want to start here. So basically what you're telling me here is everybody's in on it. You've got the Democrats who obviously don't care about sovereignty. They care about trying to create a one-party system. That's what I get out of it, right?
Well, now you're into a whole other ballgame.
Well, I understand this. You see, you've got that.
1965.
Well, sure. Know. Well, LBJ put that through in 1965, changed the way we do immigration altogether. We stopped bringing in people from Europe and started bringing in people from third world countries. That's exactly right. That has changed everything. I mean, anybody that doesn't understand that has not been paying attention. But then we look at the fact that it's all about the money, whether it's McDonald's, like you just pointed out, or any other corporation.
There's more than that. You know, money is power. And Barack Obama had the Demographics is Destiny campaign, where 71% of the Latino vote went to him versus 23% for Romney, 93% African-American, of course, 96%. So what we're seeing, I believe, is the 2.0 of that, with Biden saying, let's change the demographics of America whether they get jobs or not doesn't matter to him. Whether they end up in the emergency room doesn't matter to him. Whether citizens die of fentanyl doesn't matter to him. What matters to him is that are they going to change the voting demographic for the next century to keep Democrats in power? That's what politicians do, right? They're trying to grow their base. And if they can change the base, because he's got 26% approval right now, according to Gallup, this is a way to do that. So money is one thing. What you said, it's all about the money. But politicians don't care about money, right? Because they're taxpayer funded. They care about votes.
Power and control.
That's what they get with the power. That's what the votes give them. Yep. I just did a big thing yesterday on voter integrity from a guy from Memphis who's done the math. And the votes translate to billions of dollars of patronage. And that's what really, really matters to politicians.
How incredibly sad and disheartening. Honestly, whether it's Michigan or Tennessee or Texas, just sad and disheartening, Stephen.
Well, I'm sure.
I mean, I expect it to get much worse here. It's going to get a lot worse here real quick. So, you know, I mean, and you know that because the border's open now. It's effectively wide open today, right?
Well, you realize that Title 42 was never even supposed to be about the border. It was supposed to be about communicable diseases, giving
CDC
control. It's really Congress that still to this very second could stop this. It's not a presidential thing, according to the Constitution. Right there in Article 1, Section 8, Clause 18, the Congress shall have power to make all laws. So Kevin McCarthy, a Republican who we all just voted in last November as the majority.
But he can't make laws. Do something. He can't do anything about it. He can't do it unless the Senate agrees. That's the bottom line. The House is nice and all.
I don't mean to argue, but the Supreme Court has precedent recognizing Congress as having plenary powers over immigration. He certainly could. And then, of course, the states have been feckless at this. 2022, a year ago, is when Abbott, the largest border state, launched the Joint Border Security Operations Center to oversee all 15 agencies, and they haven't done a darn thing. And if you go back to 2010, Obama sued Arizona over their strict immigration law and won. So New Mexico.
Well, I think you'd have a jam. I have to do some reading. I won't dismiss what you're saying, but I'll have to do some reading because I think that you might be mistaken as to how easy it could be for McCarthy to do this. Because I think McCarthy would do this because it'd be a big political winner if he could pull it off. Huge, and he knows that.
Well,
Stephen, I got to leave it there.
On his side.
Yeah, I got to leave that there for you. And we're going to read a little bit and find out if that's true with the plenary power at the border. Stephen Abramowitz, CEO and editor chief of Milk Creek View Newspapers. Thank you.
Milk Creek View Tennessee Podcast. Thank you.
Any views or opinions represented on the podcast are personal and belong solely to the creator and do not represent those of people, institutions, or organizations that the creator may or may not be associated with in a professional or personal capacity unless explicitly stated.